Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Tuesday, January 11th, 2011. Tech News Today brought to you by Ford, introducing the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric with voice-activated sync and My Ford Touch, featuring gas-free power, zero CO2 emissions, and battery management technology that lets you go the distance. Learn more at FocusElectricPower.com. And by MailRoute.info. MailRoute is a secure hosted service that provides enterprise-grade virus and spam filtering to companies of any size. Try it right now, absolutely free, at MailRoute.info. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And we are back from the Consumer Electronics Show, and joining us is Scott Johnson from the Frog Pants Network and America.
Happy Apple Ryzen Day. Right?
It is. Verpal.
Vripal. Also joining us, especially because we have a web video story to sink our teeth into, but also I've just been wanting a good excuse to get him on the show, Andy Beach.
Hello, how are you?
From thevideouprising.com, not to be confused with the Apple Uprising.
Right, completely different.
Andy, you're kind of an expert in the video codec type things. Let people know a little bit about what you do before we start off the show.
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, I've worked in the video world for a number of years. I wrote a book a couple of years ago called Real World Video Compression about how to get your content online easier and faster. And very late last year, I started a new website called The Video Uprising that's really about exactly this kind of thing. It's about like the current cold war we're in over how we're going to get content delivered on the web.
All right, but before we get into that, Google planning to remove H.264 support for Chrome. Verizon had their announcement today, and as expected, they announced that an iPhone was coming to Verizon. It's a CDMA iPhone. It should be available for pre-order to existing Verizon customers only sometime around February 3rd. They were a little vague on exactly when. They said they'll let you know a week beforehand. And then you'll be able to go to a store, no matter who you are, whether you're on Verizon or not, starting on February 10th, and buy the iPhone at Verizon stores and Apple stores. The Verizon iPhone 4 is going to be the same price, $200 for the 16 gig, $300 for the 32 gig, same price as the AT&T version. It's going to have pretty much all the same components in it, except for the fact that you have a CDMA antenna. And they say, because there is a CDMA antenna, we had to move the antenna a little bit. And they also had to move the mute button. That means iPhone 4 cases for AT&T phones not work on Verizon iPhone 4
what
cases.
What a pain.
Oh, they'll work, but you just won't be able to access the mute
right
button.
Right.
Also, apparently no antenna gate issues, which current iPhone 4s from AT&T that you buy apparently don't have those either. So that's just all part of the package.
And the addition of a personal hotspot.
Yes. Thank you. Right, that's right. One other difference is that Verizon is allowing you to use your iPhone 4 for up to share your connection with up to five other people over Wi-Fi.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. So, I mean, essentially, they were creating a MiFi option straight out of the gate. And honestly, that is the number one thing that would make me consider jumping to a Verizon iPhone over my AT&T iPhone. And I'm not really having coverage issues. I'm not having some of the other problems that a lot of, you know, users have said, well, if Verizon ever has an iPhone, that's where I'm going. For me, that is the number one feature. I am seriously considering a jump based on that alone.
What about for your iPad? Verizon also made the announcement today, according to Chief Financial Officer Francis Shammo, that they would be bringing an iPad with CDMA inside so that you could have an iPad on Verizon as well.
So I asked you a little bit about this before the show, but do you think it'll be something like, I'll go to an Apple store, let's say. I mean, let's forget Verizon and AT&T stores for a minute. I go into an Apple store and they've got a big selection of iPads. Is Apple going to have basically two versions for me? Or are we going to end up with some kind of dual chip situation in your mind?
No, they'll have two versions, just same as the iPhone. That's what I have a feeling. So the bigger question is, what are you going to pay for data on these devices. And we don't have any other details about an iPad, like release dates or anything like that. They made the announcement on the dates for iPhone 4, but they didn't tell you how much you're going to pay to access the data. They said you'll choose from existing cell phone plans from Verizon, but a special data plan would be announced at a later date.
Wow. I wonder what they mean by later date. Like, right around launch next month, I guess. We'd have to know by then, right? Because if not for iPads, of course, but if we want to know we're going to be paying for these data rates for phones, that makes sense. If an iPad's coming out, are we going to get current iPad only ahead of a release of a new iPad? Are we not going to get Verizon-enabled iPads for another year? I feel like there's still a lot of questions that they maybe they don't want to answer, but I feel like maybe would help their cause.
I think it's weird that the CFO went and leaked the fact that they're going to have an iPad with CDMA in it instead of saying it on stage. Why would you do it that way?
Yeah, it's very weird.
Anyway, the Verizon Wireless iPhone 4 also raises the question, well, there probably is going to be a new iPhone for AT&T coming out this summer. We're expecting an iPhone 5. Are we going to get a new Verizon iPhone that quick, a mere 4 or 5 months after this one came out?
Well, I've got a Verizon friend. Call him my V friend. He works at Verizon and was the guy that told me about 6 months ago that they were in the middle of testing the iPhone. So he was kind of this source for me to sort of think, oh, yeah, we're probably going to get a phone. And he says, well, I'm not getting this new phone. He says, I want one, but I'm not getting my own until June. And I'm not saying anything, but I recommend some people wait until June, is what he says. So I don't know what that means. Maybe they, you know, maybe he's on to the fact that we're going to get a simultaneous release for both carriers. You know, you were banding about the idea that maybe their phone would come later. There's rumors to that effect. But I think it would behoove, I mean, it'd be good for Apple and everybody else if they both had the phone day and date. But then it's strange to release a new phone in February and get a bunch of people, you know, spending their money now when they really could have waited a couple of months and had the newest thing.
Plus, there's always a supply issue if you release that many iPhones at once. Go ahead, Andy.
I was just going to say, it would be weird to have a lag between the Verizon version and the AT&T version, too. But then at the same time, all those people that want the Verizon one, if they've waited this long and there is going to be a iPhone 5 Verizon in June, hold out the extra 6 months and just wait then.
Well, that's why I wonder if there won't be. Because why not just go ahead and wait until June? Why rush one out if you think, well, people might wait till June anyway? I kind of feel like they will do that, that they'll say, oh, yeah, iPhone 5 exclusive on AT&T for 3 months, and the Verizon iPhone won't come out until right before Christmas. I read there was somebody online who was saying they didn't think that Verizon would come out with an iPhone 5 at all, that they'd just skip one release cycle and go straight from the iPhone 4 to whatever comes out a year and a half from now. And so the iPhone 4 would have to suffice for 18 months for Verizon users. That's
horrible. Obviously people are going to flip out if that happens. If we get to that June date or whenever it is that Steve Jobs gets up and announces what's coming and he says something like a three-month delay, I think even there in the crowd, you're going to have moans and sort of gasps. I think people have been waiting for this. A lot of people really like Verizon as a carrier. They really like iPhones. Now merging is complete, and they don't want to be told that they're second fiddle or that they got to wait any of that. So I think it's kind of a mistake, but we'll see. I think you're probably right, but I think it seems like a bad move for somebody.
Of course, it's also possible iPhone 5 wouldn't come out until later this year. It might push AT&T's next version of the iPhone into the fall as well. Who knows?
Yeah, they're being a little snarky. They had an article, I wish I could point to it, but some executive was quoted as saying, you know, we're fine. We're bigger than this. You know, essentially talking about the fact that a big competitor of theirs is now getting the iPhone. And so they're being a little snarky, too. So I really don't know who's going to benefit the most by either being early or late. But this is good news if you enjoy Verizon and you want an iPhone.
All right, let's move on to the Google announcement this morning that they will remove the patent-encumbered H.264 codec from future versions of the Chrome web browser. They say that'll take effect in the next couple months. What this means is in HTML5 specifically, when you use the video tag, the browser has default video. So in Internet Explorer, it has, I think, Andy, is it H.264 in Internet Explorer?
Yeah, H.264 and VP8, if they have it installed, will also work.
And then in Firefox, it's Theora.
Theora and WebM.
And now in Chrome, they'll be switching to being Theora and WebM.
Right.
So this essentially, I mean, it doesn't mean you won't be able to watch H.264 video in Chrome. It just means that they'll either have to code it into Flash or you'll have to have a plugin, right?
Right, exactly. There would have to be, and that part is not clear. So for sure, you know, it seems like they've not done anything to touch the Flash support. So as long as something is in a Flash wrapper of some sort, you should certainly be able to use the Flash plugin and still play it. It's not obvious if they are going to support having the a plugin type model where if someone had the H.264 codec installed, HTML5 would be able to use it. That's what IE9 has said for VP8. It doesn't seem like that's what they're saying for this, but it's kind of an early, we're reading a lot into this one product manager post if we try to read those tea leaves. And that's the kind of support that they probably could change in the future depending on how big a sort of pushback they get on this.
Now, Google is saying they're doing this because they want to follow open standards. And H.264, while being very open, is not, in fact, an open protocol. It's licensed by MPEG-LA, which is a consortium of various patent holders, to allow it to be used by other people. They just had an announcement recently that it would be unencumbered, continue to be unencumbered for, what, 15 years or something?
Well, so they're actually, it's been released altogether. So originally, they were going to not collect fees for the end users who are watching it. Originally, the plan was in 2011, they were going to start collecting for royalties against the number of subscribers you had who were watching the content. And it was like in per 100,000 type chunks. Then they came back and said, yeah, we don't know how we're going to do that yet. So we're moving that to 2015. They did that sort of May of last year. And that's right about when WebM was announced from Google, and midsummer last year they made the announcement, you know what, we're just not going to collect royalties against that part of it ever. Now, that doesn't mean they don't collect royalties on H.264. There still are licenses for people who develop the encoders and decoders. So, for example, anybody that has the decoder still built in by default, like Apple for all of its QuickTime products and for all the iPhones, that's a decode license that they pay automatically for that. Any company that builds the encoder would have to pay a license fee, but they don't have to pay then some sort of fee against the number of users watching and streaming and supporting that. So that's really the difference.
This seems to be a page out of Apple's book. Google's saying, you know, we don't like H.264. Apple doesn't like Flash. They're not going to support Flash on their devices like iPad and iPhone. We don't like H.264, so we're not going to support H.264 in Chrome and try to get everybody to use our video codec, WebM. Why does Google do this? What advantage? I mean, it seems to be a disadvantage to using Chrome.
Well, it does. It seems a bit like a crazy move. It's been like, you know, I kind of tried to read all the comments from this, and they, you know, the two major comments are that they're either very ballsy or very crazy. Because the fact of the matter is, you know, H.264 is not going to go away anytime soon. It's going to be around. It's something that there's a lot of content out there in it. Even just in YouTube, there's a lot of content for it. So it's going to remain around, and it's going to be something that particularly premium content leans towards because it has features that are baked into things like Flash and Silverlight and others that they want to be able to take advantage of it for. But it is Google Chrome in particular, and that's the important part of this, putting their foot down and saying, we're going to be part of the open standards. We want to drive those forward. The way we're going to do that is throwing all of our weight, support, and engineering resource behind the endeavors that push that forward. Now, the part of it that, you know, Google's a big company, so that doesn't mean that, you know, I think we see H.264 go away completely in the other sections of Google. And in fact, I've talked to people over there before, and they've said that they need to, that each business unit, each sort of video area runs as its own separate business unit.
So we won't see YouTube dumping H.264 anytime soon. Is that what you're saying?
Probably not. It would be extremely surprising if they did. It doesn't mean that the big internal trend and the big plan is to do that at some point. And again, for a place like YouTube, that it might not make, you know, it may make sense in the long run for them to go that route. But again, for consumer premium content of some sort that has either a fee or a license already associated with it, H.264 has a lot of benefits that are probably going to come into play for the near future, particularly until WebM gets more support in the mobile space and more support in the like a set-top box and connected device space.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on it. Is this going to be a big problem for consumers, though, if we're just using a browser and we're browsing around in Chrome? We're not really going to notice, are we?
Well, I think it gets confusing now because I think what it does is it slows down adoption of HTML5. If anything, you know, if I were over at Flash right now, I would probably send a thank you card to Google because the fact that Flash is now the way that you're going to get H.264 to work in Chrome means that they just got a lot more life breathed into what they were working on and doing. And so it really confuses the HTML5 spec anymore because we don't have any dominant video standard, and who knows when that's now going to come. It's clearly the headbutting has begun.
It also means in the browser space that Google and Firefox are aligned against Microsoft and Apple.
Yeah, it's really weird how it's like watching like a tag team wrestling match where the partners keep switching sides.
Yeah. Tag in. Cage match. Wait, you just switched sides. Google, you were on Apple's side. What are you doing over here? Apple, what are you doing with Microsoft?
No, not a suplex.
Not a web. So,
let me ask a question. So, Andy, this is maybe totally naive of me to ask, but is this in your mind? Is this a move of kind of we are for the open source community and we're going to push those standards forward, but we'll go ahead and let Flash stay and stuff like that, which is arguably the least open source of all the things you can run in Chrome. Do you feel like this is just a way to say no? We just really like our tech better and we would like to see it be dominant. Or do you really feel like they're being philanthropic here and saying we want, you know, open source for everyone?
Right. I it's tough to say. I mean, I've talked to a lot of, I have some friends over there, and I really do feel like they really do want to see open source come out in a big way. And the way they can do that is sort of, you know, they're wielding a mighty big bat here to push it forward because they do have such a Google power behind them. But there's certainly sort of political motivation, I think, for it as well. It's certainly sort of lining things up and backing things that they believe as standards. Now, they believe that for a reason, and you know, I'll choose to believe that they're doing it for the altruistic and real reasons and not sort of duplicitous ones, just because I think they're all good people over there. That said, you know, it still doesn't really help. You know, it would be, I think it's really early to be dropping this. I'd love to have seen H.264 stick around for a while longer in Chrome because it would have helped get HTML5 more cemented, and then there could be bigger decisions made at a later date as to what the dominant codec is going to be. It's a little preemptive to me that they're doing it, but it's their choice, and it just makes for fun popcorn watching of all this stuff online.
And if you don't want to be bothered with the choice, just choose Opera. They support it. Yeah.
There you go.
The world's biggest microchip maker is Intel. That hasn't changed recently, but they have changed their deal with NVIDIA. There was some counter-suing going on over intellectual property in the chip designs of the NVIDIA graphics cards that was being used in Intel's integrated graphics, and NVIDIA using some of Intel's property in their chips. They have finally come to a settlement. NVIDIA will get $1.5 billion and get a license to use Intel property in their CPUs that they're making based on the ARM architecture. I mean, they're based on the ARM architecture, but there is some Intel intellectual property they use. Likewise, Intel will get the right to access NVIDIA's patent portfolio, which includes GPUs integrated into the chipsets. So cross-licensing agreement works for both of them. And Jensen from NVIDIA said they have no intention of building x86 processors. So this does not mean, and it actually doesn't give NVIDIA the right to go and license the x86 architecture and compete with AMD.
Wow. So where are we? Where do we think we're going to see their technology show up the most on NVIDIA's side? I mean, the Denver.
Probably in Project Denver. I don't know what, I'm not deep enough into this to know which patents they are going to be using, but Project Denver will incorporate the Intel stuff. But it's Intel and NVIDIA making peace. And right after NVIDIA is getting into the CPU market, that's bad news for AMD, don't you think?
Well, yeah, they have other bad news to deal with too, which we'll get to in a minute. But they, I mean, this seems like, what do we already have with AMD? We have AMD and we have ATI, basically, you know, they bought them out and they're now one company and they're doing their thing as AMD ATI or whatever they're calling themselves. So this is kind of a weird way of doing that same thing. Like these two companies don't necessarily want to be the same or buy each other out or merge in any way. but they want to be able to kind of settle the dust, shake hands, and come out of this being a kind of a weird combined force that is at least equal to the task of a combined AMD ATI sort of arrangement. So it's very interesting that they that this is the approach to that end, I think.
All right, we do have some other bad news for AMD today. We'll get to that in a second. Want to thank our sponsor, Ford, not only for sponsoring Tech News Today, but for bringing all the coverage of CES 2011 last week. They were very helpful in paying for us to get out there and build that stage and put up all those lights and do all that live view stuff. Thanks to live view too as well. Slingbox is how we got the slingback. But thanks to Ford for sponsoring our special coverage of CES 2011. Ford introduced at CES the all new 2012 Ford Focus Electric with voice activated sync and My Ford Touch. And the electric, a lot of people were, first of all, stunned that it was announced before the Detroit Auto Show, but a lot of people were thinking it might be the best thing at CES. It's powered by a lithium-ion battery with high voltage capacity, recharged by plugging it into an electrical outlet, either a 120-volt or a 240-volt outlet. They have some fast recharging on the 240-volt, too. Also has regenerative braking, so when you're driving around and you're braking, it stores up that brake energy to be used in the battery. It will offer, they say it's going to offer miles per charge. It's competitive with the other electric vehicles on the market. Provides more than enough power for driving around town, for commuting, and your power may actually be cheaper than gas. Electricity is often cheaper, especially if you charge it at night. So check it out, the all-new 2012 Ford Focus Electric. Don't forget, it does include sync with My Ford Touch. Responds to your voice commands, touch controls for battery management. When you want to find out if that charge is up to snuff yet, or if you need to let it charge a little bit longer. Entertainment, climate control, phone, and navigation. You can easily make calls, play music, and manage your battery all through Sync. Sync understands more than 10,000 voice commands in total, so you can stay connected while keeping your eyes on the road and your hands on the wheel. To learn more, visit FocusElectricPower.com. And thanks to Ford for supporting Tech News Today and our special coverage of CES 2011. All right, bad news for AMD. They have essentially fired Dirk Meyer, their CEO. He has served as their CEO since July 2008, and he is now resigning. He'll be out in a couple of months. They are already going to replace him with an acting CEO, Thomas Seifert, the CFO. But Seifert will not be taking over the job. They're going to look for somebody. So AMD's CEO, Dirk Meyer, was just on stage at CES less than a week ago, and now he's out on his butt.
Yeah, this is the topsy-turvy world of high-stakes tech, I guess. It's too bad that for him, anyway, that this is happening. But it seems like, reading some of these articles, it seems like what they're really trying to do is get AMD ready for a new era, really, in processing. And I'm talking like tablets and all kinds of portable and mobile devices that AMD is not necessarily known for getting their foot in the door on. So maybe this is a good thing. A little shakeup once in a while is okay for companies like them.
Well, you look at CES and you see Project Denver announced. NVIDIA is getting into the mobile chipset making. You see all of Intel's Sandy Bridge also having some mobile applications. And AMD sold their Imagion centric chips to Qualcomm a while back. So AMD's got nothing. They did unveil Fusion, which puts them back in the race with Sandy Bridge, and Fusion actually has DirectX 11 built in, which Sandy Bridge does not. But you don't have a mobile strategy, and if you learned anything by looking around at CES 2011, it was that mobile is where it's at right now for manufacturers. And if you want to sell chips to people, you got to be selling them mobile chips.
Yeah, Meyer said that there was plenty of room for AMD to grow in laptops, and the tablets wouldn't cannibalize those sales. That's probably smart thinking. I mean, there's certainly, you know, computers and desktops and notebooks aren't going away, but the area of growth they really have to focus on is what's happening in the tablet market. And after what we saw at CES and saw the stuff you guys covered, there is tablet after tablet after tablet coming out, and somebody's making chips for those guys. And if it's not going to be ARM or Intel or somebody else, it may as well be AMD if they can come up with a viable solution. So, you know, high hopes for those guys. I hope they can pull it off.
And AMD does own ATI. They should be kicking ass in the video world, in the integrated video world. I mean, Andy, do you see, does Intel still have a dominant position as far as video goes?
Well, I think particularly the NVIDIA announcement really helps there, because there's so many devices that have H.264 support on the GPU that NVIDIA makes. So as that gets out into more tablets and handsets and mobile, totally helps there. So I could see AMD needing a way to sort of bolster itself against that kind of threat, because that's where I think they're going to have a hard time going up against an Intel-NVIDIA combo for sure.
Moving on to the UK, where T-Mobile UK has done something very nice for their users. They have made it a better network by limiting the amount of video that you can use on your phone. T-Mobile UK has announced that its mobile data plan does not include downloading, playing games, or looking at videos. Now there'll be enough internet for everyone. They have taken your unlimited... Okay, so here's what they do. They have unlimited surfing with a fair use policy. So it's unlimited, but it's also limited to 3 gigabytes or 1 gigabyte. They've now taken that and said, still unlimited, but that limit of 3 gigs or 1 gig that you signed up for on your unlimited plan, that's now 500 megabytes. We don't care what you signed up for. We have the right to do the terms of use. And therefore, you'll never need to worry about how many emails you've sent or how long you've been online, because we're just going to stop you from being able to download files or watch videos or play games once you hit that 500 megabyte limit. They even went so far as to say you should save that for your home broadband. If you want to download, stream, and watch video clips, save that stuff for your home broadband. I'm reading it right off the T-Mobile UK website. Very paternal sort of writing here. We know what's best for you. We want to allow you unlimited email. You can watch some videos and stuff up to 500 megabytes. But after that, we're just going to throttle that stuff, except for YouTube. They're not going to throttle YouTube. You can watch YouTube all you want. The reason? Because on their product description page, it says that this service is great for basic surfing, Facebook, BBC, etc., emails, and YouTube. And I'm like, we don't want to change that copy. That's good marketing.
Yeah, I don't like any of this. I was telling Tom before the show, you can smell it all the way over the ocean. I just don't like it at all. The mobile space is in such turmoil everywhere about, you know, if we're going to start capping stuff, let's learn how to do it now so that we don't go 10 years down the road and all our consumers expect free unlimited, connectivity. And then we can't really introduce it. Then it'll be too hard. It's kind of like home broadband. We'll let home broadband have their thing. We've tried to cut that, but we can't because people get really pissed. So let's set the standard now, have people's lower expectations happen now so that we can, you know, screw them long term. I don't like that at all.
I have to correct what I said. YouTube is blocked. I mean, all video is blocked after 500 megabytes, but they are still touting that it's good for YouTube up to 500 megabytes. Then you should just use your home broadband.
And you should know better.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, come on, people. It's a phone. You're supposed to make calls on it. What is with all of this surfing of video?
Yeah, I don't like that at all.
Well, and I guess Three in the UK just recently got rid of their limits and said, you know what, fine, it's unlimited, do whatever you want. So it just seems like that's a really backward step.
But isn't that kind of that's the rub. We're going to see there's going to be a division. There's going to be companies who, in order to compete, are going to offer unlimited service and then get a leg up, I think. And then you're going to have others who think they're too big to fail who are going to say, well, all right, we're going to cut stuff in half or give them 500 meg and that's it and tell them to go use their home computers for the rest and let that shake out. The hope is that there is enough competition in that market that the guys who offer the best value to the customer end up winning and those who don't. But the problem is a lot of times it's like two companies, one of them the government owns and the other one is, you know, some subsidized thing that nobody can control or change, and you end up with monopolies, and then nobody really does get a choice. So I hope for the UK viewers and listeners, I hope you guys get some resolution if you are a T-Mobile user and this changes.
I'll tell you what the resolution is: quit and go to Orange.
Yeah,
or if you've got three coverage, take that. You've got competition in the wireless space in the UK. Use it. We don't have as much here.
No.
Could you see T-Mobile coming to the U.S. and doing this type of thing as well?
No. T-Mobile U.S. will not do this. Yeah. They're too far behind to take this kind of risk. I don't know why they're doing it in the U.K., but they're doing the opposite in the U.S. They're trying to pitch themselves as the more open one.
Yeah.
MySpace is cutting 47% of its workforce. This has been rumored for weeks, but they just sent out the official announcement. News Corp CEO Chase Carey set a turnaround or offload it clock for the social networking site back in right before Christmas. And now they are going to cut over, let's say, roughly 560 of their workforce. They've cut it down to 560 from nearly 1,420 last year. They had a reduction last year that brought it down close to 1,000, and now they're only going to have 560 people left. MySpace getting rid of a lot of people here, but probably wise.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they're so less applicable than they were at some point in the past. So it almost makes sense. Like normally when you see that kind of thing, it's like, it's a sign that the company's on its way down or something bad's really happening. But the reality is, like, I think we all think bad things have already happened in MySpace. They had a huge brain drain last year where a lot of the people that helped start it and get it up and running left the company. And so a cut that big, it's painful, but it's probably in line with what they need to do to, in order to just keep the doors open.
I see it as a kind of a positive move, to be honest. You're right. There could really only go up. And maybe this is just their effort to lean things up a little bit, you know, get nice and lean and mean and, you know, focus on the stuff they're good at. What are we good at here at MySpace? Well, we're really good at, you know, music and entertainment and the stuff that we really should be focused on. We shouldn't be trying to Facebookify everything. We kind of blew that already. We had our chance. We missed it. So let's focus on what we're good at. Let's cut everybody down by about 50% and go for it. I hope that's the sign that this is, instead of a sign that they're slipping further or going away. Because it's a name that matters, and I think they could do something with it. So let's hope they do.
I think what you could definitely say is Facebook has won. The MySpace and Facebook are not in competition anymore. Facebook is the winner, and MySpace is slinking off in the corner to do something else, to try to be an entertainment-oriented site. It feels to me, it has the flavor of AOL in the early part of the last decade, where they just could not compete as a broadband provider, and they slinked off in the corner to become a content portal, and they're still trying to make that work, but they've been able to survive this long. I think MySpace will not go away anytime soon, but they'll sort of be a second brand that they'll have a lot of users, but most people won't really remember them or think about them. Poor MySpace. Tom, yep. Tom was never my friend. That was their big mistake. I joined MySpace before Tom automatically friended you.
Oh, man. The writing was on the wall from that point.
Then on, yes. The Supreme Court in the United States has declared that record labels will have to face an antitrust lawsuit. The High Court declined to hear an appeal from the four major recorded music labels, asking the High Court to throw out a lawsuit that claims the labels broke antitrust when they set a 70-cent wholesale price limit. Back, do you remember these? Press Play and MusicNet store days. This has been in litigation for quite a while now. 28 lawsuits filed between 2005 and 2006 that argued the label's first online music projects illegally raised prices for digital music. Now, with the record labels trying to wrest control back from iTunes, they're trying to do some more of this kind of price fixing. And if they lose this lawsuit, that's going to be bad news for that strategy.
Well, they won't be allowed to do it, right? Like that'll put an end to it. And what does that actually mean? And does that mean that? I mean, when people throw around the idea that iTunes has got the power now. Well, no, iTunes just has a whole lot of users who like to buy music. So here's your revenue stream. And to look at it like, I've never understood this. It always feels like the record industry sees this finally a valid way to make money on your music and to subvert piracy to some level. And when for so long they were sure it was a lost cause. And now that that's all in place and there's something working and there's other stores too that are doing great, they all want to, we got to wrestle control back. Well, control of what? This is how your music
profits,
got
my friend.
Sold. Yeah.
Dollar bill, y'all.
Hate that. Hate that thinking. It just seems so backwards to me. And I'm sure I'm not alone in this. But if they lose this, if this thing gets lost, maybe it bodes well for the future for us. But, 70 cents a song, that's a pretty high locked in price. And I'm sure they'd love to have that again. But I don't know. I think they should. They are looking this. Or what's the old phrase? The horse or the gift horse in the mouth or whatever. I forgot how it goes.
Yeah, anyway. That's it.
You know, looking a gift horse in the mouth. That's mm-hmm. it. And I don't think they should do that. It seems like a dumb move. And we're all just sitting here going, dude, you people are crazy.
Also, in Canada, the music industry getting a setback as the Canadian recording industry is ordered to pay $45 million to settle a class action lawsuit over copyright infringement. Essentially what they were doing, the major record companies in Canada were taking songs and putting them on compilation discs, sort of like best of the year type discs. Compiling a bunch of songs from other artists and then selling them without telling the artists, putting a pending note next to it so they'd never had to pay them any royalties.
Wow. That seems low. Seems pretty low. I mean, I don't know. These things go hand in hand. I guess everybody wants bigger, better profits and to leave the artist in the dirt. But, you know, not telling them. I mean, how would you like to be some top Canadian artist? Honestly, I can't think of one. But let's say there's some top Canadian artist. And they go to the store. No offense, Canada. They go to the store and they see this best of 2010, blah, 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 something, something. And they're right there on the record. I would be ticked. You know, they're already taking all my money.
$45 million doesn't seem like that much. I bet the labels aren't too upset.
Yeah, probably not.
Is it wrong that the first Canadian pop star that came to mind is Bryan Adams?
Bryan Adams is covered by this, as is Celine Dion, Loverboy, and others.
Loverboy. Awesome.
Yeah, who knew?
Avril Lavigne.
I'm being told Justin Bieber's Canadian.
Justin Bieber is he doesn't have a nation. He is the nation.
The nation of Bieber.
Yeah. All right, let's take a quick break and thank our sponsor, MailRoute. If you're trying to battle spam, and you're going to be, we have some bad news coming up in the news fuse about spam. You're going to need MailRoute. MailRoute, whether you're one user or 50,000 users, will protect you from spam and viruses. It's a secure hosted service that filters viruses and spam for companies of any size. You edit an MMX record, have all the emails shuttled to MailRoute. They shuttle it back to you, and they take out the spam. It actually really works. If you don't believe me or Leo Laporte, we both use it. Check them out, MailRoute.info. You can try it out for free. And the account starts at $2 per user per month for 10 users. And because of demand, MailRoute has added a new service for individual users, less than $30 a year. This is super cheap. Just stop buying the extra large latte. Cut down a little bit and you can stop spam. Is that worth it to you? Two less sips of coffee and you can stop spam? $30 per user per year for single users. Visit MailRoute.info and sign up for email filtering that actually does work. Time now for the news fuse. We mentioned last week a report from Paul Thurrott about Windows Phone 7 sending mystery data that runs up the data count and in some cases causes people to pass their monthly allowance. Microsoft has finally acknowledged the problem and is telling BBC News that it is investigating why some handsets running its Windows Phone 7 software are sending and receiving so-called phantom data.
That's the worst Star Wars movie ever. A coalition of public interest groups asked federal regulators on Tuesday to investigate whether new mobile internet plans from Metro PCS violate open internet rules passed in late 2010. The plans offer unlimited web usage, all in quotes, but Metro PCS's terms exclude video sites other than YouTube, here we go again, from unlimited web usage and block the use of internet telephony services such as Skype and Tango.
Nintendo may be overdoing it in warning people away from the 3DS if you're a young kid. The American Optometric Association released a statement last week asserting that 3D viewing may actually help uncover subtle disorders that, left uncorrected, will result in learning difficulties. Not only that, but the 36,000-strong group of optometrists suggest children younger than 6 can use the 3DS in 3D mode if their visual system is developing normally.
Video games as diagnosis material. That's awesome. The new World of Warcraft expansion, Cataclysm, sold 4.7 million unit sales since its launch on December 7th. 3.3 in the first weekend, I think. Blizzard Entertainment, a division of Activision Blizzard, announced today. Blizzard said that based on its internal estimates, the milestone has helped the title reach a new record for monthly PC game sales. 3.3 million of the game sales came in the first day. Oh, I had that wrong. Marking it as the fastest-selling PC game of all time.
Did they get an achievement for that?
Achievement unlocked. The problem is they beat themselves at the achievement because they did the very same thing a year and a half before.
They already had that achievement. Intel will integrate DirectX 11 graphics tech in its next generation of laptop and desktop chips based on the Ivy Bridge architecture. That looks like a prettier bridge than the Sandy Bridge. Sandy's kind of dull. A company executive revealed at CES that Ivy Bridge would have DirectX 11. AMD has already implemented DirectX 11 in Fusion, its lower power chips. Intel expects to start shipping Ivy Bridge chips with DirectX 11 support to PC makers later this year.
Yay. That's good for gamers. A security researcher has tapped Amazon's cloud computing service to crack Wi-Fi passwords in a fraction of the time and for a fraction of the cost of using his own gear. Thomas Roth of Cologne, Germany, told Reuters he used custom software running on Amazon's EC2 service to break into the PSK protected network in about 20 minutes. With EC2 computers available for 28 cents per minute, the cost of the crack came to just $1.68.
$1.68. Love it.
That's awesome.
We're number one.
Woo, again.
We're number one.
Again.
The United States is responsible for 18.8% of the world's spam.
Wow, we're number one with authority.
That's right. This according to security firm Sophos. India came in second with a paltry 6.88%.
We're like three times that.
Look at
India.
Spain. We're just kicking spam all over Spain's face. 2.24%. And don't worry, we'll maintain our lead in spite of the reports of declines in spam because it turns out the Rustock botnet that turned off in December is back online as of January 10th. USA!
USA!
USA! USA!
I'm going to go get my gun and shoot it in the air.
Full of spam.
Your LTE phone could knock off your cable TV. This according to the UK research firm Ofcom. I love that their name is Ofcom. Anyway, I'm talking about knocking things off. Frequencies that used to be reserved for broadcasting analog TV. I love the British spelling of analog. The next year will be up for auction and are expected to quickly fill with 4G, quote-unquote, LTE signals. Cable TVs using the same frequencies squeeze down a wire, but if the LTE signal is strong enough, it can sneak into the wire too, generating interference and forcing you to cut the cord.
GTV Hacker has a 13-step walkthrough to crack the Logitech review, which does involve actually cracking open the case and doing a bit of soldering, after which point you can put custom firmware on it and let it download, install, and run apps from the Android marketplace on your Google TV. Bypass that pesky television network blockage, too.
Nice. And finally, a plan to create a consortium led by Microsoft to buy Novell patents has been withdrawn. Utah Connection, Novell. Early in December, Microsoft, Apple, EMC, and Oracle notified the German regulator that they plan to form CPTN Holdings with a view of purchasing 882 of Novell's patents, but the filing was withdrawn. What's that word? Whatever. On December 30th, no reason was given for the withdrawal by the German authorities. Nine, they said when we asked.
We didn't ask, but if we did, that's what they would have said.
And then they said, schnell, so no quickly.
Halt! Google has launched a new version of its Google Goggles application for iOS and Android. Now it can recognize print ads in magazines. Pretty nifty. And also can solve Sudoku puzzles for you so that you don't have to. If you want to spend while away some hours solving Sudoku, forget it. Just use Google Goggles. Thanks to Casey Ho, Google engineer. Google Goggles will solve your Sudoku for you, too.
Man, that's been a long-needed solution by Google.
Totally.
Wow, that's weird.
Why would you do this? Why would you need to do this? For hints?
I don't know. People like that, right? They like to cheat their way through stuff and use codes and stuff.
Maybe
I'm guessing.
Yeah, maybe this was them. They lucked into another solution for Google Goggles. Like, they created the technology, did all these things, and then someone accidentally took a picture of a Sudoku puzzle, and like, it was really smart for some reason. They were like, oh, well, I guess it does this too. Let's promote it.
They showed it in the video. Racing Tammy McLeod, Sudoku champion, and of course the app wins because it just scans, calculates, and then boom goes the dynamite. Sudoku solved.
That's Sammy McLeod, the Sudoku champion. Who would have known? Who'd have thunk it?
Tammy, not Sammy.
Oh, Hammy, sorry.
Not Hammy either.
Hammy.
What are you saying?
What are you trying to say about her? All right, on to the calendar. In court today, it was like The Social Network in real life. The Winklevoss twins and Mark Zuckerberg for a hearing regarding the Winklevoss twins court case, asserting that their settlement wasn't good enough. They had settled for $65 million. They're now reopening that, saying they were fooled by the value of the stock. Basically, the brothers received $20 million in cash and $45 million in stock based on a $36 per share valuation. But now they have a piece of paper that says Facebook told their own employees that that same stock was worth $9 per share, and they got ripped off. So anyway, they were back in court today, and that kicked off. Indonesia has given RIMS 2 weeks' notice to get rid of the porn and allow them to do the spying. This is just the latest in the round of countries in Middle East and Southeast Asia going to battle with RIM over spying. Indonesian politicians are calling for RIM to provide lawful intercept and porno blocking within 2 weeks or face losing contact with 1.5 million Indonesian BlackBerry users.
Are they this hard with everybody? Is it just RIM, or are there?
Well, this has been going on all across the Middle East. I can't remember whether it was Jordan or Qatar that started it. And then Saudi Arabia, and then India, and now Indonesia. They're all saying, we want to be able to spy on the BlackBerries because BlackBerries have the best encryption. And so it's the hardest to break into. Everything on your Apple iPhone or your Android goes right over the internet. But the BlackBerry stuff is encrypted end-to-end between a BlackBerry server. And we've gone through this. RIM says, look, we don't have the keys to the encryption. And so they've had to go with every country and sit down and probably at length, rolling their eyes, explain, this is how encryption works. This is why our product is good, and this is what we can do, and this is what we can't do. They've solved it every time so far. We still don't know how, but they've solved it, and they say they've solved it without handing over any kind of internal information.
Wow.
Julian Assange has an extradition hearing set for February 7th and 8th. And this will be where they decide whether he will get sent to Sweden to face the charges of sexual assault. Assange could face execution or get sent to Gitmo if he were to be handed over to the United States. At least that's the theory that some people are putting out there based on the kinds of charges he would see if he was handed over to the United States.
Well, they would be treason charges, right? Theoretically, that's the sort of stuff that would be levied.
Yeah, exactly. And you can execute someone for treason.
And Gitmo is not so bad. You just got to wear the jumpsuit. It'd be all right.
I think the food's bad and the waterboarding is not so hot. January 19th, mark it on your calendars. The report is that Steve Jobs and Rupert Murdoch will take the stage in San Francisco to unveil the new Hearst-powered iPad magazine. We'll keep an eye out and find out if that's actually going to happen. But the Daily News could be coming your way. And finally, Hank Chen has reclaimed Donkey Kong's high score, Scott.
Yeah. Man. About time. Because Steve Wiebe did it like a week ago. So where you been, Hank Chen? This is a back and forth that is epic. And I love watching it. I love seeing these guys one-up each other. We were trying to figure out before the show how they're actually doing this. Like, there's a kill screen at some point. So you've got to be making these points up between start and end, and where they're doing that, I don't know. I'm infinitely fascinated by it, however. And my guess is Wiebe will come back and beat this like in another week or so. And don't count out what's his name, whose name just left me. He'll be back. No, the other guy, third guy.
The
mullet wearing dude. He'll come back and blow everyone's socks off at some point, and it'll just keep going. And I love it. I think this is a great, great thing.
Let's get a quick voicemail in. 260-TNT show is our phone number if you'd like to call and leave us a message. We have a voicemail here from someone who's happy about the Verizon iPhone announcement.
Hey, TNT crew. I'm just so happy about the Verizon iPhone news today. It's just really made my day because now people can stop talking about it.
Andy, what do you think the next big Apple rumor should be?
Oh, man, that is a tough one. We've had the Verizon iPhone for so long as the rumor that I feel kind of sad that we have to retire it. I want to retire the jersey of it in some way. Like, they need to have, a rumor jersey, and they need to just hang it up.
Yeah, the iPhone itself would be up there, along with the Beatles on iTunes and the Verizon iPhone.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so I don't know what possibly you could do to top the epic Verizon iPhone.
TV? Like, app, like an actual television?
Yeah, I guess the TV would be like an actual TV, not a not a connected device.
And that's going to take a couple of years for that to hit the same epic proportions.
Well,
you know what I mean?
And it's been cooking.
It's been cooking, but
for
it hasn't
at least
dominated.
2 years.
It hasn't
now
been
is
dominant.
Its chance to take center stage.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to miss it personally. I'm going to miss this whole like rigmarole
you
going
get
back
so
and
attached
forth.
To the rumors.
You're emotionally connected to it, Scott.
So sentimental. All right, on to the emails, tnt@twit.tv. Mike, the chip designer in Florida, says, "Hey, Tom, Jason, and everyone else who's there today." That would be you guys. "I'm seeing a lot of coverage on the new droid Atrix, but almost everyone seems to miss the feature that seems to be the most significant to me, the fingerprint sensor on the top of the back. To my knowledge, this is the first consumer smartphone in the United States with this level of biometric security." I don't think that's true. I think there have been fingerprint sensors on phones before, but they are very few. He says, "I think this actually makes many features of the smartphone more realistic, such as mobile banking, mobile shopping, etc. I currently use my iPhone for these tasks, but the security code is too cumbersome and easy to steal. This new feature on the Atrix might be enough to make me ditch Apple for my next phone."
Ooh. Hope Apple's listening.
You guys ever use the thumbprint on your laptop, like the biometric for that, to lock it or protect it?
Yeah, I used to use it on my ThinkPad.
Yeah, so did I.
I never got it to work very well. Like, I tried it, and I was all excited to get a laptop that finally had it, and it never really worked good. So I finally gave up, and I just went back to using the password.
Look, man, it's your weird fingerprints, man.
I guess so.
Don't you show your that. Fingerprints. People will steal them.
You're a man in black. That's what it is. They go through that fingerprint burning thing. Right. Hey, we got another email from Jason. Not this Jason.
Hey, guys.
Jason not from you. Near Rochester, New York. That's a great way to keep people from out of your front lawn. Hey there, hopefully fully rested TNT crew. First, thanks a lot for the CES coverage. I look forward to watching the 3-hour special on iTunes. I saw Tom and Brian review the 3D laptop that tracked your eye movement. I wonder if audio companies will come up with similar technologies for ear tracking. I hate that when you still have to precisely position surround sound speakers in order to get accurate sound surround sound. It would be great if you could just get them all around the right location. Then a sensor tracks everyone's head. That way, every person can hear in surround no matter where they are in the speaker field. Thanks as always, and keep up the fantastic work, says Jason. It's a great idea.
In fact, they were demonstrating this at CES. Several companies had 3D audio, which I was making fun of. I'm like, well, what's the difference between that and surround sound? But the difference is, I finally went into one of the booths, and the guy said, well, 3D audio, you can stand wherever you want. You don't have to position yourself in the right place to get the surround sound. And he was right. You could walk all around. You know, I think there was a low angle of like about 20 degrees, 15 degrees from the source where you lost the 3D sound. But anywhere out in front, you didn't have to. It didn't even have to track you. It just filled the room with sound.
That's great.
All right, that's it for this edition of Tech News Today. Thanks, everybody, for watching or listening. And Andy Beach, thank you for your explanation of Google's video issues. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks a lot. It was a lot of fun being on. Glad you were able to find me, and glad I could stick around for the whole time.
Yeah, I appreciate you taking the time. Let people know where they can find more of your stuff on the internet.
You can find me on Twitter at Andy Beach, and check out thevideouprising.com, my new site for covering basically technology and video delivery.
And Scott Johnson, damn it, I missed you.
No, I did too, Tom. You're walking around on the show floor at CES, and I'm thinking, man, I should be there doing that.
You got to come out.
I know. I almost did for lunch. This came this close that weekend to coming out there, but I bet you'd have been too busy anyway. But either way, I really enjoyed your coverage. If people want to find out what I'm doing, they can follow me on Twitter. Extra Life is the name on Twitter. You can also go to frogpants.com and see what's going on with all the shows and the comics and everything else I'm up to. And there's a big announcement coming to Frog Pants next week, so stay tuned for that. It's going to be awesome. And thanks for having me on. I love hanging out with you guys.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. Everybody can find us at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll see you tomorrow.